Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight familiar, but I'm party.
And Jake Latondras.
And bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur, sitting in the Duck South Studios. You know what, Josh? It's very unusual that we're recording at night. This has a weird feeling.
You know, look. I mean this when I say it. I appreciate and I truly love every single person that listens to this podcast. But here's what I want everybody to know. It is 11:02 p.m. And this is usually the time of night that, no, we rarely ever, because the only time we recorded at a time of night like this was when Ramsey and Jake were over in Australia. A few months ago. But this is usually the time Rocky and I are talking, just having normal conversation, texting, or sometimes on the phone. But I hadn't really heard from Rocky in a whole lot in the last couple of days, which is nothing out of the ordinary or anything like that. But when you're in high school and you just start dating some girl and you're just really crazy about her, and then, you know, all of a sudden one or the other of you text the other one, "Hey, are you awake?" Yeah, so about 20 minutes ago, I was watching TV and looking at my phone, and all of a sudden I get a text message, you know, "Rocky, hey, you awake?" And I said, "Man, this feels like a high school relationship that's just starting to kick off." You know, you kind of wait till your parents go to bed, and then that way you can stay up and talk real, real low and slow till after midnight, you know, without getting in trouble. So, but yeah, no, we usually don't record this time of night, but it don't bother me. I don't know when, if ever, Rocky and I, you know, sleep. So we're.
Well, look, you know, coming up in just a minute is part 7, Becoming Martin with Justin Martin. Hey, before I got on the phone with you, I didn't tell you this in the pre-production. So, Stacy, everybody from Duck South knows who Stacy James is. But anyway, Stacy sent me a text. He said, "Man, I'll tell you some crazy crap about duck hunting." He said, "Sitting on a certain public ground right outside of Greenwood, Mississippi, there is a guy that's been there and had his boat back into the almost to the edge of the water at the boat ramp a week ahead of time. May have been, well, I guess the youth weekend Saturday, so I guess he pulled it up Saturday after everybody got out from youth hunting. I can confirm it, and I know the guy's name of who it is. I'm not going to say it on the air.
Well, never mind. Never mind. I don't even have to worry about it. That'll save me a trip. I don't have.
I have confirmed that he is there. Son, you were talking about mad at ducks. You were freaking mad at ducks. If you have pulled your boat to the boat ramp a week ahead of time.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's setting the bar. That's letting them know, hey, I'm here and I'm coming for you. And you just better be ready. That's like giving them look, you got a week to get your butt and get your butt up and fly out of here, or I'm coming after you, every one of you.
You gotta understand, Stacy is an avid listener of the podcast, and he's an avid duck hunter. And he said, "Man, I don't think I'm that mad at him in probably 20 or 30 years."
Well,
I got listen. I'll admit it too. I'm not that mad at him.
You know, I'm not that mad at him. I'm not. I mean, I get mad at him. I'll go out of my way for him. Yeah, that's taking it to a.
I just gotta say, man. I have seen so many ducks die in my life, and that's not said in the context.
Well, no.
Of
I mean, you outfitted for a guy with 2 years. Decades. Yeah, I mean. 20-21 years, so no, that's no kind of brag or anything like that.
But I will say this: you put me on a good hunt, I get more excited than a 2-year-old lab. There were times that you know I'd be walking around like you'll take it's always customers. You'll take your gun, mother. No, I'm not taking my gun, man.
Yeah.
I'm fine. I promise. I'm just going to go call and work the dog. That's all I need to do. Just watch y'all have fun. That's my job as a guide. So watch the joy that it brings you. I'll never forget one of the funniest. I was thinking about this after I told when we were getting off the line with Spence the other night. We had that conversation about not mad at him, really, blah, blah, blah. I was thinking back to a hunt. I was with Jimbo up at, you know the spot up at Minner City?
Oh, yeah.
They were coming in by the hundreds, and there were thousands circling over the top of us. And that was, I want to say that was probably somewhere in 13, 14, somewhere in there. It was in that time, man, I don't want to have to kill them. I killed enough, you know.
Mm-hmm. But
that day, I became a kid. up duck hunting all over again. I was standing beside a guy from Kentucky, and I literally just about drowned him. I got so excited. I was grabbing the back of his wader, shaking him, man. I was throwing him off as he was trying to shoot. And finally, he killed his six, and I took his gun away and shot my six. You put me on a hunt like that, I definitely get excited again.
I'm a lot the same way. I have my gun every time I go, and I load it. And you know, matter of fact, and I mean, this is, you know, all inside. I mean, really today, before I went deer hunting this evening, I got my waders out and was just checking through a few things. And I mean, I just laughed at myself. Because the same few boxes of shells that I poured in my blind bag last year, they're still in my blind bag. Now, I'm not talking about the ones some I poured in there like January 26th. No, I'm talking about the ones that I poured in there Thanksgiving Day last year. I don't know. I had some phenomenal hunts last year. I did. Nothing to do with like not wanting to kill them. It's just, I guess just through the years, I've been blessed with some just, with a lot of awesome hunts and a lot of cool experiences. And I just, a few years ago, I got to the point where, you know what, if I, matter of fact, the last year that you outfitted, I took some guys to, it's a rough year. I took some guys to my absolute favorite hole in the timber, private ground, and it was late in the year. And you know, they asked me, they said, you going to take your gun? I said, no, I mean, I'll have it, but I'm not going, I don't worry about that. I'm not worried about shooting. And anyway, long story short, get there that morning and it killed a couple ducks. And they said, you sure you're not going to shoot? I said, you know what? You know, I think I will. And I did. And I killed one duck that morning out of the ones we killed. And that was the only duck I killed in that whole year. And I can't remember. I had to go back and look at my journal. How many times I hunted in there with family and friends? That was the only duck I pulled the trigger on that year. I would have been just the same as if I hadn't killed any. I saw so much happen. I saw so many smiles. I saw, you know, so much stuff happen there. It didn't bother me. It didn't bother me one bit. And I've just kind of. And for a few years before that, and every year since then, I've just kind of been that way. By the end of the year, you know, if I pull the trigger a few times, that's fine. But I don't.
I think the best way for me to put it, last year, I went with Houston Kennedy, Davis Cock, and Coltrium to a flooded timber hole in Arkansas last year. I shot my three or four ducks pretty quick, three or four mallards. I got back there and started cooking. They have a kitchen in their blind.
Yeah.
And I was just as happy back there cooking as I was shooting the ducks.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what happens when you get fat and old, man. You get happy about food.
Yeah.
Food excites you. If you're listening to this, when you hit about 40, 45, man, food excites you as much as a duck does.
You can tell it in my pants. I absolutely love watching somebody else pull the trigger. And like I said, it has nothing to do with like feeling guilty about killing an animal or anything like that. It has nothing to do with that. I've been able to see and witness and be a part of and pull the trigger on a lot of phenomenal hunts in you know, just my almost 30 years on earth, and I'm happy about that, and I'm fine with it. And I'm looking forward to this weekend. I'm hunting with some guys that I literally just met a few months ago. They're not even from Mississippi. I'm hunting with them, and it's going to be their first full weekend of hunting only timber. And regardless of what happens, I'm looking forward to that. And they are too. And they've been planning this for months.
Well, I know that I've got a little lull here because, man, I've got two that are – I've got a little girl, my middle child, and my youngest son. They are eked up with duck hunting. So they're going to follow. Well, I don't have anything to worry about. They're going to follow in their father's footsteps. I can see getting to a point in your life that, man, you see a lot of these we've got to get to Martin, but you see a lot of these old timers that get to a stage in their life where they plan a lot for ducks and they have a lot of ducks, but they don't hunt but once a week, every couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember as a 20-year-old, I mean, what are these guys doing? What are they thinking?
Yeah.
And now, I'm kind of like that.
Yeah,
I could farm
a
duck like a cow.
I get it.
Or my goats. I could farm those ducks just like that.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, I totally get it. I do.
You're an old
and
soul,
I never,
Josh Webb.
I never thought I would, but I get it. And it hit me a few years ago, and I know it hits everybody at different stages, but we've got another phenomenal episode with Martin.
Hey, we talked about the call room. We talked about Cy. Man, I was listening to it tonight because I forgot about this. We spent a lot of time talking about Cy, but we even talk about marriage. And he talks about just life
and
values
in
this episode.
Yeah. And, oh, man. Yeah. And I did, too. I don't want to say forgot about it, because it really stayed heavy on me for a few days following it. But it's a strong episode. It will absolutely grab your attention.
We talked about Martin's favorite episode from Duck Dynasty.
Yeah.
He talked about where Phil and Cy take the duck to school to dissect it in front of the kids.
Yeah, and Cy asked him the question that not only left the whole room of kids just speechless, but I'm pretty sure on that night it left, two-thirds of America speechless when Cy looked at that poor room full of kids and asked them if they knew what NOM was.
All right. Well, Josh, we are out of time. We will talk again tomorrow night because you're going to be working on food plots and deer stands all day. So we'll talk again tomorrow night. We'll get some more knocked out. Got a couple of important topics we got to knock out tomorrow night and then the next night because we got a little Thanksgiving episode coming up. Couple of important topics coming up in that. But let's get to Martin now. All right, guys, like I told you on the front end of the podcast, Justin Martin, and you also know him as Martin, is joining the show today. I guess we're on part I'm going to sound like an idiot, but I guess we're on probably part five or part six of this, Josh or Martin, either one of y'all.
Yeah, something like that. I really don't know either.
I think, well, now we're on seven, ain't we? I think.
Oh, it may be. It could be.
Heck, let's just call it part five through seven. We'll figure it out. It's either five, six, or seven, and then we'll figure it out from there.
I know this. It is unbelievable the number of people, and I say this every week when we record, unbelievable the number of people that are listening, but also not just listening, but sending me messages, hey, man, that episode today was awesome, especially now that we've kind of broken into the Duck Dynasty. Everybody feels like they're part of that. There's some younger people that are listening to this that may not have got into the Duck Commander because they just a little too young, younger side of it, but everybody felt like they were part of the Duck Dynasty.
Yeah, it's, I see that when I go places, and I'm like, I always ask, I'm like, but y'all don't know nothing about Duck Commander? And they're like, well, no, we ain't but 13. I'm like, oh, crap, man. You don't, I mean, really and truly, you wouldn't have known nothing about it. And you start thinking about it in those terms, and you start, you know, halfway feeling old. You're like, gosh, okay, all right. Okay, so all you've known of us is Duck Dynasty. Cool, okay. Well, there's a lot of us before that, too, you know. So, so yeah, it's kind of bizarre when you start thinking about it in those timelines. It's like, man, that's just crazy, you know.
Well, last week when we left it, we talked about Josh and I, we talked about the personalities that were part of it, and we talked about Josh and I's favorite episode. But I guess a good way to close that out, what's a couple that popped into your mind, Martin? Well, I mean, not so much that you had to be a part of, but after you watched it, you were like, wow, that's good stuff.
Well, you know, to be fair, and we've already discussed one of them, so I'll go with two more. You know, we discussed the one where, you know, I was getting ready for the date, which is one that I get commented on all the time. You know, we'll take that one out. But one that always gets brought up with me is the Duck Season Eve campout. And when I think about it, you know, and especially in the time of year we're at where we've got duck season just right around the corner, I get tickled. You know, the funny thing is, that was kind of early on in the filming of it. And we're out there and they were telling, you know, Si, like, just, you know, kind of act, they were trying to put a little drama in it. So they're like, act like you saw a snake down that log, you know, and say something about it. Well, he did, you know, he's like, oh, okay, this is easy enough. So he's like, oh, good night, there's a snake. Well, next thing he did was pulled his pistol out and fired off three rounds down that log. And them boys went scattering for the high hills. So they didn't know what to think, and pieces of that log were skipping off everywhere, and he's shooting that .22 pistol, and, you know, nobody was in any danger of anything, but it was just, boy, you would have thought that it was like, you'd have thought there was a shootout at the OK Corral the way they started scattering when that gun went off, man. It was rich in entertainment.
Go ahead.
Well, and the other part that I always hear, and I still get Instagram and Facebook messages and text messages from buddies and asking me about those stupid mallow dogs, where I took marshmallows, roasted them, and put them in a daggum hot dog bun. That was just because I was hungry, man. It ain't like some delicacy. I got hungry, and that's all we had. So, you know, because the idiot done went off and forgot the sausage, so. You know, big boy, we talked about this, how big we are, Rocky. Big boy got to eat now. So I got hungry, and I made do with what I had. I put marshmallows in the shape of a sausage and put it in a hot dog bun. Let's roll with it.
Hey,
and for those of y'all that might be listening to this, don't do that. That it will you're going to need to call a plumber. Let me put it that way if you do something like that. So we'll just leave that where it is.
As funny as you bring up that episode, as funny as it is, you know, that episode was on last week sometime.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah. That's the episode where Willie pulls up the RV and y'all are camping out, and he pulls up the RV and oversleeps.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. That's happened many a times. He's not necessarily a duck's worst nightmare. So, you know, it's just the boy likes deer hunting, and I get it because I like duck hunting, and I'm not a deer's worst nightmare. So, he catches a lot of flack for that coming from this family, you know, and being surrounded this business. And that's not saying he doesn't enjoy duck hunting. It's just not deer hunting to him. So, you know, that's just part of it. And we all have the different things that make us tick. I've met people that could care less about anything other than turkey hunting, you know, which don't make no sense to me, but mainly because probably we ain't got no turkeys down here. But to each their own, there's stuff that makes all of us tick. And, you know, mine is like, you know, this past weekend with them youth boys watching them, that group of 40 teal come backpedaling into the decoys. And, ooh, man, it made the hair stand up on the back of my neck like it was the first time all over again.
Well, what, you know, we were talking about the things. What's kind of funny is every time we get to talking about episodes, we seem to always circle back to Cy doing something crazy. But I imagine that had to have happened just a bunch, because since, I mean, it wasn't really scripted or anything like that. I mean, it was just I don't know. It's funny to me how things circle back to that. But is there anything else like that just really, with Cy, that just stands out? Above anything else that he did?
Oh, man, I'm trying to. There's a bunch of them with him. The other one is when, you know, so a lot of these episodes you shoot kind of separate and apart. And we don't really know what was going on during it. And when we were watching the first edited cut of when Cy and Phil went to the school for like career day, and Phil's teaching them how to gut a duck, which is funny in of itself, that he takes them, the only time you see dead ducks in the whole thing is Phil taking them woodies out there and showing the dadgum second and third graders how to gut a duck. For one, and that sound that they caught of his hand coming out of it that we all know, and it ain't no big deal, but to hear that sound and to see them kids' face. But when Cy looked at that camera and he said, "Have you kids ever heard of Nom?" Every one of us just, I'm talking about, almost choked on our tongues. It was that collective gasp and just, are you kidding me? Did he just ask a bunch of third graders if they've heard of Vietnam? And then he goes into the story about the Bengal tiger ripping the boy's arm off. And, you know, I mean, just out of all the things you draw up for what you think could be funny to tell a bunch of third graders, and he comes up with that. I mean, when people say, "Oh, that thing's scripted," and all that, I'm like, well, dadgum Cy Robertson deserves an Emmy, an Oscar, and whatever else he can get for it. Because if you can make that crap up, then so be it. I mean, you know, good luck on that one.
when y'all were sitting in that duck call room, I think this is a great point to start on. You're sitting in the duck call room where a lot of the episodes were shot, or a lot of the moments, great moments in all the episodes were shot, were in that duck room. But did you ever have to do a double take when Cy would come up with these words?
Oh, there! I can't tell you how many times we had to reshoot something because we would just die out laughing. Because he would just say something, I mean, just something so stupid that, like, I mean, you couldn't do nothing but laugh, and you just blow the whole thing. Like, there was one where we got to talking about superheroes and, you know, Superman versus Batman, and I can't even remember what he came up with, but I remember it took us 20 minutes to get that shot, because every time somebody would quit laughing, somebody else would start back up thinking about what he just said. And, I mean, you get... Oh, and what are some of the other ones? crap. I'm trying to think, like, or that when he showed up in the scooter after Willie had backed into his truck that day. I mean, are you kidding me? I mean, the boy founds an electric wheelchair to show up in all because his back hurts because Willie backed into him going about three miles an hour.
I forgot about that one. Yep.
You know, I mean, oh, it's just, there's just something about that guy that just, I mean, it's unreal. Or when he decided, when his grandkids told him that, you know, YouTube was the big thing and he got him a GoPro to start filming what he did every day. And, you know, an hour and a half of the footage was him in the bathroom. Like, because that's how much he pees from drinking all that tea, you know? So, I mean, it's just... Yeah, but that's all scripted. Yeah, make that up. Find somebody to write that, you know? If they wouldn't be working on a reality show for A&E if they could write that crap. So, that's all I'm saying about that.
The first time he used the word, hey, what do people from A&E do? Hey!
Oh.
His favorite word was, hey.
Well, the funniest thing about him is not even the hey. It's Si is a walking paradox, maybe is the word. Because if he says, no, that means yes. And if he says, yeah, that means, no, that ain't going to work. So, like, whatever he says, it's generally the opposite. It's just, if he says, no, hey, that means that's a great idea. You ought to do that. But he always starts with, no, hey. And then if he says, oh, yeah, that ought to work. Well, no, you know that he thinks it's stupid. So, I mean, that's just the way the boy is. And then when we got to digging around in his backyard for his buried treasure.
Oh, yeah.
You know, where he buried the Vietnamese money and all we found was a bunch of freaking quarters. Like, I mean, I remember him saying, he's like, hey, but that quarter's 1974. You know how much that thing's worth? Yeah, 25 cents. I know how much it's worth. Keep moving. And then a quick little internet search will show you that the Vietnamese dong is worth nothing anymore. Like, not even in museums or nothing. They're like, no. So we out there digging holes on his backyard like a bunch of morons for nothing. But we found like $40 in change, so that was pretty cool. Yeah, but.
You know, for somebody to drink that much tea, or seem like they're drinking that much tea at 67 to 70 years old, somewhere in there, man, that sucker had to pee a lot.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, and that's not, look, that's another one everybody said, oh, he just did that for the show. No, sir. From the moment I met Si Robertson 20 years ago now, probably, yeah, it's not quite 20, probably 15 or 16. He had a jug of tea with him. He had a jug of tea and he had a Tupperware glass everywhere he went. And he still does to this day. And I've told him, I said, Si, when you pass away, can we do one thing? Just one thing. He's like, what? I said, can we donate your kidneys to science to figure out how in the world they're still working? Like, I mean, because it's unbelievable. I mean, with the amount of caffeinated tea that he drinks. His work day was a gallon of tea, so you could always tell how long he was going to be there. It when that tea ran out, he was going home.
He was gone. That was his hourglass, huh?
I don't care if it was gone before lunch. He was gone. Or if it stayed around till 5 o'clock. It just didn't matter. You can always judge by how long Si's going to be somewhere by that jug of tea. And when it ran out, he was gone. He didn't even say bye. You just look up and he's going like, well, you got a tea. So, you know, that sucker, he's the only man I know, too, that took a nap to get ready to take a nap. He would have a pre-lunch nap and a post-lunch nap. So from 10:30 to 11:30, he'd go in and take an hour nap. And then after lunch, from about 12:30 to 1:30, he'd take another nap. Never in my life had I seen somebody like that.
I'm going to bet that he's one of those that probably gets up at 3:30, though.
He wakes up pretty early, yeah. He would always beat you there. I mean, you weren't ever gonna beat him to work, that's for sure. But he's at least a two napper, but he's in the bed by 8 o'clock every night. So that was always what was kind of a drag. If you went on a hunting trip and he was there, you had to walk around quiet starting at 8 o'clock just so you didn't wake him up. Not that I don't think you could have woke him up anyway, because if you could wake him up over his snoring, then good luck. But, you know, he's one of those, too. And don't tell that sucker anything about a CPAP. He thinks they're poisoning you when they're doing that to you. So, never mind, you sleep better and you wake up rested, but, you know.
All right. So let's visit this for a minute. Like I said in the beginning of all this, and we jumped off into that, but the most creative part to Duck Dynasty was the duck call room.
Mm-hmm.
Walk us through that from, you know, that original idea to where it, because it became such a major part of the show, just like the ending was sitting around saying the blessing, that the duck call room was where the whole theme for the show was created every time.
Yeah, it was. It started out in their world. You know, they didn't really know what to think about it when they showed up here. They just, you know, we talked about it where they just kind of followed us around and saw what we did. So they, when they ended up in the duck call room and, you know, just sat there and listened to us and watched us do what we do in our little, take our little 5 minutes to talk about, you know, news, politics, the weather, whatever, and the tangents we would get off in then, they were like, whoa, this has got to be part of this show right here. And little did we know that most episodes would be shot at the beginning right there in what they call a cold open, where, you know, kind of the idea for the episode gets initiated right there. So it was really one of those happy accident deals. And, you know, one thing I never forget, they come in and ask, like, they come in and saw a bunch of writing on the wall. And they were like, why are you guys writing on the wall? Like, what's this about? I'm like, well, when we were shooting that Benelli show, when something funny would happen, we'd write it up on the wall just to, that way we could remember to film it when those guys were here. Because when we were shooting the Benelli show, they weren't here all the time like the A&E bunch was. The Benelli guys would show up in September for teal season and were gone generally into December, 1st of January, because they had had enough of duck footage and everything else for us to do. So, you know, there was a solid 6, 7, 8 months that they weren't here. And funny stuff happens throughout the time of year. So anytime it would happen, we would just take a Sharpie and write it on the wall. Because we were like, man, this may be really funny and entertaining. So the A&E people got to go and through our stories written on the wall. And they're like, oh, yeah, we need to do that. That seems hilarious. And, you know, then they'd look at the next one and be like, oh, but that one seems really good, too. And they're like, oh, but so does that one right there. Like, and then we're like, well, why do you think we wrote them down, you bunch of idiots? We thought it was funny, you know. So it was, you know, just. Same thing. I mean, I never forget whatever they read the one about, of course, we're back on side, but when they read the one about him eating the coon crap, you know, when we were out there picking muscadine berries and, or muscadines during the early spring, they were like, did that really happen? We were like, well, we wouldn't have wrote it down if it didn't, son. So I don't know what to tell you about that one. I mean, the man's blind, half blind and half deaf. So we just thought it'd be funny. And they were like, oh yeah. Yeah, you think he'd do it again? No, he ain't going to do it again, but we can get close. You know, so that's, so the creative for the show a lot of times was us. I mean, that was where we, you know, it was just, but it was stuff that happened in everyday life that, heck, you can't make up, you know, so.
How many years of stuff was up on that wall?
Yeah.
How many years of stuff did we have on that wall?
How many years of stories was up on that wall?
Oh, golly. So we started it when we started the Benelli show. So that was, I think, 2008, maybe 2008 or 2009. And, you know, a lot of this, a lot of the Duck Dynasty stuff was all shot in 2012. So, you know, 2011, 2012, and then all the way through 14. So, yeah, I mean, you're looking at 6 or 7 years worth of stuff. And even when they would leave during duck season, if something funny would happen, we would, you know, we'd write it down too, and they'd come back and they'd be like, well, what y'all got for us this year? And we're like, well, funny you should say that. Here you go. You know, from the part of, you know, when we took the deal to go get the four-wheelers and, you know, I stopped up the crapper on the RV and because Si cooked the Spam and the jalapenos and all that stuff. So, It's just, I mean, you never know what's going to resonate to people, but, you know, when you realize, when you started seeing the reaction, you're like, oh, yeah, everybody's just human. This happens to everybody. Like, this ain't just us that this stuff happens to. So that's what was great about it, you know.
So the duck call room really was a duck call room. I mean, there was no, it's always been there, that duck call room.
Oh, yeah.
Shut in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's always been here to the extent of when we moved uptown. Yeah, that was the first thing we did when we moved in here. It was just me, Godwin, and another guy in the shipping deal. And we found our own little room in this old warehouse, kind of back away from everything, and made it our own. And from that point on, that was just the duck call room. When we were still at Phil and Kay's, like when I first started here, it was the, if you go back and you watch some of those episodes and you see the little metal building out beside their house, that was the duck call room, so to speak, there. But when we had to move because of the flood, this little room just came to be its own thing away from everything. So it had power, air conditioning, and a TV. That's all we needed.
I remember an episode at Phil and Kay's when they were looking for, oh, gosh, the patent to the first duck mm-hmm. calls that he made. Was that the duck call room out on the river?
Yeah, that was the one out on the river, that old shed out there beside it. Yep, that's where, when I first started here, that's where I was. That was the duck call room I was in, but I wasn't in it but for about, oh, not even a year before that big flood came because of them two big hurricanes in September and October that year, back to back. I think it was Ike and Gustav, maybe.
But 2009?
Yeah, 2008, I believe. Maybe, it might have been 2009. I can't even remember now. It all kind of runs together. Yeah, I guess it was 2009, probably. Yeah, it was probably September 2009. And we got dumped with about 24 to 30 inches of rain on those two deals kind of within weeks of one another. Then the river came up to like 46 feet, which meant we couldn't get any orders in or out. We were still high and dry. But we had to park on the hill and walk down to Phil and Kay's because we couldn't drive our truck because the river was in between us and there. So, Willie said, no, we gotta be able to get our stuff out because we were just like, huh, can't do nothing. Can't get the trucks here. We can't carry it up the hill. So, sorry. He's like, no, that ain't going to work. So, that's whenever he found this old warehouse up here owned by his in-laws. We moved into it. And, you know, I remember walking in it and saying, gosh, dang, we ain't ever going to fill this thing up. Little did I know we'd have another one about 4 years later that was full to the brim, too. You know, we went from filling up one aisle in a giant warehouse to having two of them full of duck calls and hats and shirts and all that kind of stuff, man. So it was crazy.
Speaking of episodes, what was... When you hear from fans or you see numbers back, I don't even know if y'all actually saw the numbers. What was the fan favorite episode? Do you know?
The one I think that we heard the most about was probably when Phil and Kay renewed their vows, the little wedding down on the river, because that deal... reached a lot of people. It reached a lot of families. It reached a lot of people that you would have never otherwise known anything about, because that was kind of when, you know, Phil was the first time you kind of saw Phil as somebody not the grandpa and the patriarch of the family, where you kind of heard about his past a little bit on national television, where you heard about the man that was not so upstanding of a citizen as he has been, you know, ever since I've known him and long before then. But you saw a flawed man and a woman that decided to fight for a marriage. And, you know, in a world of today where, you know, divorce is so commonplace, and, you know, she had every reason back then to divorce him for the stuff that he did and the fact that she didn't and stuck it out with him. And the comments that you hear on that, and the influence it had on people whose marriage were on the rocks, but they decided to stick it out, or that, you know, or that went through the same thing and decided to stick it out. And here they are 40 years later, and, you know, a stable in the community and all that. So when you hear that kind of stuff and the influence that experiences like that had on people in a time where, you know, I'm not going to say that, that divorce is necessarily taught, but that it is an option, you know, that it's a viable option that we live in the world today. But coming from a time where divorce really wasn't an option, where two people, when they got married and made that vow in front of each other and in front of God, they stuck with it no matter what, was pretty stinking cool. You know, and I can speak from being, I still consider myself very much a newlywed going on 4 years. But, I mean, I can tell you in the 4 years, there's been times, man, where marriage is tough. And you know what? Throwing in the towel would be easy. But you stop and you think back on those vows that you made to that person and to God, and you're like, no, I'm sticking it out, son. And, you know, it's just not something that you hear of a lot today. These days, it's, well, if it gets tough, you know, let's just quit. So, you know, when you hear stuff like that and the influence that that has on today's society, it really does your heart a lot of good, and it makes you realize there's a greater reason of why you're doing all this stuff.
And I think in the world we live in, you know, a wise person once told me years ago, he said, social media may destroy a lot of things because of the unrealistic expectations it puts on life. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he said, well, you know, you see these people take a picture at Disney World, and for 5 seconds that they're taking this picture, they look like the happiest family in the world. But you don't get a glimpse to that other 23 hours, 59 minutes, and 55 seconds of probably, you know, not all of it, is fighting and gnashing and screaming and yelling, and, you know, I'm tired, blah, 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 I'm hungry. You don't see that side of it. But they're just tough on everybody. Everybody, oh, but social media, it drives me. I know that we can't have a real world social media that nobody wants to post the bad things in life. But it's just like saying, man, it's tough on marriage is tough on everybody.
Oh, it is, man. And I had an old man tell me before I got married. He said, "Let me tell you something." And I'm like, oh, yeah, here we go. I'm about to get some wisdom right here. He said, there's two things that everybody sucks at. And I was like, okay, I'm interested. He said, marriage and raising a kid. And I said, well, why do you say that? He said, because you've never done either. And when I stopped and thought about that, I said, you know what? He's right. Like, we do all suck at it. And the reason we all suck at it so much is he's right. We don't have the experience, A, and B, there ain't a person on this earth that ain't selfish. There ain't not one of us that was born not being selfish. And, I mean, you really have to make a conscious effort to do both well. And when I say do both well, that means doing good 75% of the time, and the other 25% is screwing up. And, you know, and being man enough, A, to ask for forgiveness, and B, to accept forgiveness, which is a hard thing to do. You know, I mean, that's a pride deal. That's a selfish deal all in of itself. So, but you're right on the social media, which is why I try on some of mine to show out the points where I quote unquote fail. And failure is not necessarily, you know, not killing a limited ducks or not killing a deer, but I try to show on mine the process that it makes, that even after doing this for 20 something years, that you can still make a boneheaded mistake and learn something after 20, 25 years of doing something. You know, most people would say, no, you can't, you know, you're tapped out. You can't learn anything else. But man, it's just like I was telling y'all before this deal, taking those kids hunting this year or this weekend. Man, it was another teaching level in patience for me and for them, because I was trying to film them kill some ducks because they thought it would be kind of cool. And then they were like, wait, y'all have to watch these ducks fly by you early in the morning like this when we'd normally be shooting and have 12 green-winged teal and we're out of here? And I'm like, yeah, this is part of it. And they're like, phew, I don't know about that. And I'm like, well, just think about that before you decide if you want to hunt for a job. You know, if you think that's something that you want to do. And, you know, I'm like, you know what's even worse? Imagine when you got the 160-inch deer that you've been hunting for 4 days, walks out, and the cameraman says, nope, can't see him. I said, and you just got to let him walk when your pin on your bow and arrow is lit up like new money and you know you could smoke him. And they're like, well, we don't ever see that. I'm like, yeah, you don't ever see it because that don't make for entertaining TV.
That's right. Yeah. That's exactly right.
So that's why on mine, even, you know, I try to be transparent even through those times where you do step back and you learn something and you gain a new perspective on things. And, you know, I think that's, you know, that is a major downfall of social media. You don't see, you know, we post about our buddies when they fall in the water or something like that, but you don't see the boneheaded move when you called the shot 2 seconds too late and 20 mallards simply basically got by you. You don't see those, you know. You only see it when everything went right and you got full straps of greenheads hanging around people's necks and everybody's high-fiving and all that. So, you know.
You're right.
But it's a great tool to reach people. It's a great tool to help teach people. You know, one of the coolest things I've found out since being on this podcast is all the messages that, like you said, you get and I get and people just asking questions. And, you know, I'm here to help, man. I love for people to learn from my mistakes. And, you know, I don't have all the answers, but I got a lot of them because I've screwed up. So, you know, that's one of the coolest parts about doing all this is people reaching out to you and asking these things because, you know, otherwise they wouldn't have ever reached out to me. So I actually enjoy looking through the messages and scrolling through them and, you know, and then you get the stuff like, man, what you said really worked. And like, look, here's the picture of what happened. I'm like, heck yeah, man, let's all high five and have fun about that, you know, so.
Hey, Martin, you know, off topic, and I know we're off the story a little bit, but I want to ask you this. As the receiver that's seeing all of these quote-unquote, doing air quotes, happy moments on social media, don't you think it creates in some people insecurities in the receiving end that are seeing this stuff? This unrealistic, they're setting unrealistic expectations in their mind that of what they're seeing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think you are right, because there's going to be days that, you know as well as I know, and I can give you a perfect example. Last year, I stepped foot in some of the prettiest green tree timber you've ever seen in North Arkansas. Beautiful, big giant oak trees. I mean, everything surrounded by rice fields. Everything's froze up around it like they're coming. And we killed 2 mallard ducks. And this place is a hot hole. I can tell you, I've hunted it before when it's right. And you leave there thinking, well, I must be the worst duck hunter on the planet because now I don't have something to show out here. I mean, I can't say it wasn't the conditions and it wasn't this, because it was clear sunshine with a 20-mile-an-hour north wind, and we managed to talk 2 of them to give it up down here in this flooded timber surrounded by rice, you know, and it's all froze up. And these people can't handle non-limits of ducks. Because there has been, you've got to kill a limit. You got to have this size pile. You got to do this, that, the other. Instead of saying, you know what? The good Lord woke me up this morning. I didn't have to go to work. I got to go out there, watch the sun come up. I got to actually kill 2 of these ducks and have a great time with 5 of my closest friends. And now people can't feel like they can celebrate that because of what social media has done. And I'm here to tell you, man, celebrate that crap. Like, have fun. Rejoice in the struggle, man. The Bible tells us to rejoice in the struggle. That don't mean just the struggle of life or, you know, the struggle is, but rejoice in the struggle of everything. Crap. Go out there and say, you know what? Them little feathered suckers with a brain the size of my pinky nail just whooped me. I mean, it happens to me all the time in sucker. I mean, you know, and Same way with the deer. So, you know what? I just hunted my butt off and I didn't kill nothing. You know, congratulations, deer. But you could have been doing something else. You could have been at the paper mill working 16 hours. You could have been, you know, and I think we get lost in this. You lose that sense of accomplishment because you don't have a picture to show or you don't have a quote unquote story to tell, you know, but all because of all of this went on. And like, but Hammer, like, that is your story. That is the story to tell. Show that you're human. Show that this stuff happens to everybody. And I'm talking about everybody. This year in Wyoming, I'm hunting the hottest hole in the country. There's deer walking by me left and right, and I missed twice, mind you, twice. And I ain't ever, ever, ever missed on camera, much less twice. So you want to talk about a man that had to step back and take a little slice of humble pie and say, okay, all right, here we go. You know, and I felt like one of them professional golfers that had the yips putting. I felt like I couldn't do nothing, man. I didn't feel like I could have shot the broadside of a barn. Like, I just, but you know, I put it out there on social media, and some the response from the people was like, "Oh my God, it happened to me too." And I'm like, "Well, here's why I miss them deer. Like, let's talk about this. Let's open up a dialogue about you've done all your homework, you've moved stands, you've shot all year, and you still screw it up. You know, and maybe that's the lesson that I needed to learn was." To just go up there and be patient and trust the process. And yet I kept trying to take it into my own hands, and the good Lord was like, I'm still in control. Yeah. I still got this. Just a little friendly reminder. It's going to cost you a deer, but I still got this. You know, and if we can learn to learn in those moments, then I think we're all better off.
Well, it's kind of funny that a lot of what you just said, and you don't know it because we recorded the opening before you came on, Josh Webb just fully said and fully agreed with you.
Yeah, because I'm sitting here loving to listen to it.
Yeah, I mean, Josh and I just had the discussion about the – no, you don't want to hear this. I'm sorry to even bring it up in the main part of this podcast, but the Blaine Duck Dynasty topic. The Duck Dynasty generation. Josh and I had that discussion and proved, without a doubt, 100%, Duck Dynasty is not any way, anywhere, anyhow responsible for what's going on in the duck hunting world today. No way possible. Oh, well.
Yeah, when I read that kind of stuff, man, it just kind of, it doesn't bother me because I know for a fact that it's not true. What I don't like about it, and I think I expressed this on a post over the weekend, was that it's an easy way for people as a cop-out to get away from the real reason on what's happening.
Exactly.
It's a real easy way for people to not take ownership of being a little more friendly, a little more forthcoming, a little more approachable about hunting in general. And duck hunters for a long time, I mean, I'm talking about even since I started duck hunting. Now, I had a great group of old men that showed me the ropes, and I couldn't be more thankful for it. But even then, there was some other hunters around that carried, for whatever reason, a very elitist mindset of, well, if you don't do it this way and you don't hunt here and you don't do that, then you're not really doing it. And I never understood that. And I still don't to this day, and I don't know why it exists. Why can't we all want everybody to hunt better, to kill more ducks, to be better stewards of the land, to do that? And I'm not saying that I do it 100% of the time. There's some mornings that I wake up and I'm just, you know, kind of in a sour mood. I've been doing it for 70 days and, you know, they done made me mad. And, you know, not people, but ducks. And I just don't want to be forthcoming with why I'm doing this and why we're doing that. You know, I just sit over there by myself. And I mean, I wear it on the chin. I haven't always been like that. Like, and there's days that I still have to, like, jerk myself up by the bootstraps and say, hey, get your head out of your butt. You know, we're here to grow this thing and keep it going. But I just think it's a way for people to put something on something else without looking in the mirror and taking ownership for what they potentially could do different, you know.
Well, that's my thing, and that's what we were talking about, Rock and I were talking about earlier, is in order for
the new generation of hunters, or I mean, not even a whole generation, just someone who's new to it or whatever, in order for that to happen, somebody has got to be willing to put forth a little bit of effort to make sure it happens. And unfortunately, a lot of people see that, well, that takes effort, but me just saying, no, I don't want to help in any kind of way, doesn't take any effort, doesn't take any work. And that's the easy way out.
It's yeah, just, and I mean, it kind of goes full circle back to what we, you know, we were discussing in the marriage part. It was like, it's just selfishness is all it is. It's,
yeah.
It's you know, it's kind of falling short on, you know, love God with all your heart and love your neighbor as yourself, is all it is. And I, again, I'm not perfect, and there's days that I don't do it. And, you know, it sucks. And I get mad at myself every time I get back to the office or to my house and stop and think and realize, oh, there was a moment I could have done this in, and I didn't do it, like a moron. However, I'm not quick to point the finger at somebody else. I'll wear that, and if I can, I'll reach back out to make amends for whatever, you know, like, hey, man, sorry. My, you know, I had my head shoved up my rear end this morning. I apologize. Look, here's why we did this, or, you know, here's what I'm thinking. This is why we didn't go here and we went here, and, you know, stuff like that, just trying to help people out. And, you know, I think a lot of it is sometimes people, guilty conscience gets the best of them, like, because they realize there were opportunities like that they missed. But look, here's a, don't keep yourself down, man. Pick yourself back up. And the next time the opportunity arises, do something different. Change your attitude. Change your perspective on why you're there and what you're doing. And, yeah, I think, and that goes for everybody. I mean, and I'm talking to myself as much as I'm talking to anybody else here is, you know, if we all do that, then the whole community is better off. The whole duck hunting community is better off as a whole. And everybody just has a more enjoyable time. Are there kids out there that are hunting that are disrespectful? Of course there are. Can you teach them respect? Of course you can. Does that lack of respect come from parents being absent at home? Of course it does. I'm just, before you start judging these young kids for what they're doing and what they're not doing, you know, just take 5 seconds to talk to them at the boat ramp. Ask them, just say good morning, like, you know, just, you know, and leave it at that. Maybe that starts on to something different instead of, you know, get out of my way. I got to go. I'm the only one that matters. So, you know, it's just that kind of deal. And, you know, it's the world we live in, man. It's, you know, get in, get out, move on. So,
you know, my thing and something I tell myself is, you know, if for some reason tomorrow I didn't get to hunt anymore, whether I'm not here on earth anymore or something happens, I can't hunt anymore. Two things. Is there somebody that I would want to, or is there somebody that I have in my life that I could hand my blind bag and my calls, my shotgun to? And is there somebody who'd be willing to take that because of what they've learned from me and go hunt with it out of respect? I mean, if you can't answer that question as a hunter and it doesn't just go for duck hunters, then you know, push yourself to try to be in that position. And instead of just your stuff having to go sit in the corner and rust away, you know, put yourself in a position to where, you know, you can answer that question. And I'm talking to myself in that too. You know, I mean, is there somebody that you can hand that stuff to and know that it's being hunted with and being hunted with respect, for whatever they're out chasing.
Amen. Amen to that.
Well, I will have to say it has been a pleasure, but also a pleasant surprise that we kind of broke away from the story and talked about this because who better to hear it from than you, Martin? I mean, some of the stuff we talk about on this podcast all the time, but to hear the thoughts of somebody as respected as you are, what they think about it, because, you know, a lot of times people don't want to offer opinions that are in your place, what they think on this stuff.
Yeah, and it certainly don't bother me. And look, I'm just as open as I am. I challenge anybody out there that if, you know, if you see me somewhere and I don't do that, call me out on it, please. Like, you know, I'm coachable, man. And there's, you know, again, and if I've anybody's listening to this that I've ever done the opposite of and rubbed the wrong way, hey, I apologize. Reach out to me. Let's see what we can do to rectify things. Like, you know, and I mean, I just think it's something that we can all hold. Everybody can hold themselves just a little bit more accountable. And if we do, I think that the whole the whole deal is better off. And it's kind of the way that I run this business is just, you know, from my side is I put a certain amount of accountability on people, and you know, I challenge them for that accountability. And if you can hold yourself accountable to that, and you have a measuring stick, and you do this and you do that, and then hey man, we're all good. You'll never hear a word from me. I'm very much a hands-off manager. I'm not going to micromanage you. I'm not going to do anything because I try to build in those levels of accountability where you know that if you're doing a good job or not. And I think, you know, if we take some of that and put in just to the mornings at the boat ramps or mornings at the gas stations or, you know.
Online,
after the hunt at the diners, you know, and realize, you know what, that duck season is duck season. That duck season isn't mallard drake season. That you know, there are other ducks out there. And I'll tell you right now, if I had my druthers, I'd shoot 6 green-winged teal every morning before 8 o'clock and go to the house. Let me just be honest with you. I ain't got to shoot them big old green-headed rascals. I enjoy it. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, give me 6 of them little green-winged rascals, and I'll move on about my business. You won't see me there past 7:30. I'm fine with that. but, you know, I it's just like them kids the other morning, you thought, and they said, oh, we don't want to shoot them teal. There's a mallard drake out there. I said, have you lost your mind? I said, you don't eat many of these things, do you? I was like, hey, I'll tell you what. My tax for coming this morning is 4 green-winged teal. Shoot me 4 of them, and then y'all can do whatever you want to. You know, and I ate me some green winged teal breast and watched me some college football Saturday afternoon. So all was right with the world.
Well, it has been a great podcast. Very important topic to cover. Josh, as always, thank you. Martin, thank you for being here, and thank you for offering those opinions to a lot of listeners. And we want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.